Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
This episode of The Amateur Traveler is brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Off the beaten path experiences to over 100 fascinating countries on all 7 continents. Visit intrepidtravel.com for more info. Amateur Traveler, episode 335. Today, the Amateur Traveler is going to take a break from looking at travel destinations to talk about solo travel as a woman. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have 3 news stories for you. In the first one, a boy was able to get on a plane in London and fly to Rome without a ticket, without any passport or visa, and his quote was that it was easier than doing homework. Liam Corcoran, 11, had no passport or boarding pass and revealed that no one challenged him throughout his astonishing adventure. Another news story that's coming from Fromers are cruise lines dumping their sick passengers. This is not a good news story. Fred and Connie Clausen's honeymoon cruise on a Royal Caribbean Serenade of the Seas ended on a tragic note. He basically had a massive heart attack. The ship diverted to St. Kitts, where he was transferred to a hospital. And that's only the start of the problem, because after he's dropped off in St. Kitts, the hospital situation, according to the couple, was nothing short of deplorable. The floors were covered with dried blood and vomit, and the emergency room frequently ran out of supplies. On several occasions, they had to take a cab to the pharmacy to buy medication. The question is this the way that Royal Caribbean should deal with sick passengers? Clearly, they need to get them medical attention, but it's not clear that they're getting better medical attention by being dropped off in St. Kitts. And then another bad news story is at a recent security conference, the Black Hat Conference, someone demonstrated that they can open up the locks of several hotels that have the key cards with a simple device that they can make for only $50. So you may think twice about leaving your valuables in your room of your hotel. For links to all 3 of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. And in other news, you may have noticed the Amateur Traveler now has a sponsor. We're being sponsored by Intrepid Travel. Get off the beaten track with Intrepid Travel. Intrepid travelers discover real people and real cultures on over 1,000 different trips in 100 countries. Traveling in small groups, averaging 10 people, allows for complete cultural immersion, while local guides ensure authentic, safe experiences. Intrepid brings positive benefits to their host communities and is committed to traveling in a way that is respectful of local people and cultures. For more information and to request a free brochure, visit intrepidtravel.com. That's intrepidtravel.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Janice Waugh, who's coming to us from Solo Traveler at solotravelerblog.com, and come to talk to us about solo travel. Janice, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
As those of you who listen to the show regularly know, we are generally talking about a travel destination, and every once in a great while, and more infrequently now than it used to be, we deal instead with a topic rather than a destination, and this is going to be one of those shows. And especially where, Janice, you are known for Solo Traveler, it's right there in the blog name, I wanted to bring you on and talk about solo travel. You don't have necessarily the typical I'm 22 and out backpacking around the world kind of stories.
No, because I'm 55. So no, I'm not that type. Though I was in my 20s. I was backpacking, not around the world. I didn't make it that far, but I did travel solo in my 20s as well. But now I do so in my 50s.
And you didn't necessarily start out with a goal of becoming a solo traveler.
No, I mean, at this stage of my life, I did not anticipate being a solo traveler again. What happened was that, you know, I was very fortunate. I traveled a lot with my husband, with our children. We loved travel. We had a small business together, my husband and I, and we sold it. And we took off for almost a year and traveled and homeschooled our youngest. But unfortunately, when we came home, he became ill, my husband, and he passed away in 2006.
But you kept traveling.
But I kept traveling. It took me a bit. Took me a while. But then what happened is that after he passed away, about 2 years later, I mean, grieving is not a fun process, and it's a process that goes up and down all the time.
Sure.
But just over 2 years after he passed away, I felt myself going down again and kind of falling into that grief cycle again. But this time I was not keen on going there. I was kind of fed up. I got a bit angry. And I said, I guess I'm traveling solo. And it kind of almost popped out of my mouth in my recollection. I have no idea whether I said it out loud or not, but it seems like I did. And it just struck me. And I picked up the computer, which was beside me, because I am a writer and the online world was not foreign to me. And Googled solo travel. And what came up first was a site that had an awful lot of Google ads. And I thought, no, this is not a person's voice. I think that this should come from a person's experience and their voice. And so the next day I started Solo Traveler. And I started traveling that spring by myself. And I haven't looked back. It's been fabulous.
And you were telling us while we were working out sound details and such before the call about an email you got yesterday from someone who recently discovered your site. I wonder if you'd retell that story for the listeners.
Yeah, it was so great. It actually wasn't an email. It was on my Facebook page called the Solo Travel Society. And I call it, it's kind of an ironic name in a sense, because all these solo travelers getting together on Facebook. But one of the members posted on the wall saying that, you know, she was planning an 8-week trip to America. She's over 40, and she was thinking she was a little bit crazy to be doing this until she found the Solo Travel Society. So I reposted that so that all of the members can see, because that's how Facebook functions. And before posting what she said, I said, let's give this STS member, Solo Travel Society member, some support. And as a result, like over 50 people clicked like, which was like a thumbs up for her. And there were over 45 comments of encouragement for her from women, mostly women, also men, into their 60s and as young as their 20s. And it was just, she was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed. We were all thrilled. It was just so lovely.
So why solo travel? You have the option. You could just get on the last bus seat in that 40-person bus and take a tour. And I think a lot of people, if they wanted to continue to travel, would go that route. What would you have missed out on if you had gone that route?
I'm kind of an independent soul. And it's not that group travel is not the right thing. I mean, taking tours make a lot of sense for solo travelers and under certain circumstances. So, for example, if I'm going into an area or a country that is more challenging and maybe I'm a little uncertain about, I would start with a tour. Right. I went to India in February. I didn't start with a tour in that case, but I started in an ashram. So I had this, you know, landing place for a week and could kind of get my footing. But then I take off and really travel solo. So it's not that a tour is not the right thing. It's that for me, it's got its place, but it's not everything I want to do, because once I get out there on my own, that's when the real magic happens. That's when I meet the most fascinating people and get to trip over into corners of the world that I wouldn't otherwise find. So that's for me why I really do travel independently and solo.
Okay. Well, that was way too intriguing to let that go without some explanation. You meet intriguing people and you travel to fascinating places. Give us some examples. Who have you met along your travels?
Okay. Where do I start? My goodness, there's so many.
Well, how about your first trip as your first trip solo?
Okay, my first trip solo, I went to Havana, Cuba.
We should point that you're coming from Canada, so you were doing this legally.
That's right. That's right. I went to Havana. I wanted to go someplace where the culture was really different, but I only had a week, and so I didn't want to be crossing oceans and all the rest of it. And Havana's like 3 hours away, same time zone. I think maybe an hour difference. I can't remember exactly. And you're certainly launched into a different culture.
Same time zone, except off by 50 years, right?
Yeah, just about. It's really different. And this is not a story of meeting people, but it's a real learning experience, this trip, because what happened is I arrived there at 11:30 at night by plane, and I took a taxi to my hotel, which I had previously booked, so like it was all organized. But what I didn't realize was that my hotel was on a pedestrian mile, and so the taxi driver dropped me off at the edge of the pedestrian mile and just pointed. And I was supposed to go down this very narrow cobblestone street and find my hotel. And this is Havana. They don't light the streets at night because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. So I'm there with my roller bag, and it's going clump, 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 and it's echoing off the walls of this, you know, stone walls of old Havana. And I'm feeling incredibly exposed. Right, I was feeling very nervous. And I actually went right by my hotel because it was not lit either, and the doors were closed. And fortunately, I met a security person. You know, he backed me up. I found the hotel. I went in, I checked in, got to my room. It was really nice, but there were no windows, right? And it was at that point I'm going, oh my goodness, like, I'm not planned. I'm not ready for this because, you know, I wasn't anticipating the difficulty at night. I shouldn't have arrived at night. You don't arrive at night when you're traveling solo. It's mm-hmm. a rule for me. Now it's a rule. I learned that one fast. And I had the questions about the hotel. And the next day I went and I exchanged money, which was a complication in itself because they've got two forms of pesos. And then I had a terrible meal, just a terrible. And then I got lost in the maze of old Havana. And at that point I got back. When I finally got back to my hotel, I called the company that booked the hotel for me. And I asked to be moved into an all-inclusive because I didn't think I could make it. Hmm. And then they said, sure, yeah, okay. So I thought, okay, I've got 24 hours or whatever. I've got an afternoon in Havana. I'm going out. So I went out and I went to the Capitol building and I saw kids playing baseball on the grounds. And I, you know, they went to the Malecón and walked along the water there. And then walked through old Havana, not being concerned about finding the place, but just enjoying it. Anyways, by the next day, I didn't receive a call, and I realized that I'd been dismissed. And they were just saying yes, but not really going to do anything. But I was also relaxed at that point, and I'd learned a lot about traveling solo again and felt confident, and I was really happy. I had a fabulous time. I went into jazz clubs. I went salsa dancing. I went hiking outside of Havana. I did a lot in that trip, and it was a real education about why traveling solo is so great, because along the way in all those situations, I met people for very short periods of time, and it was really fun.
Now, you mentioned you have a rule about not arriving at night now.
That's right.
What rules do you have? What rules have you come up with over time here?
I mean, that's a rule for me, but there's lots and lots of tips about ways of being safe mm-hmm. when you're traveling solo. But I do have certain principles that I go by because I've written so much about traveling solo and doing it safely. I've tried to condense things down into just some very fundamental principles of safety. It's a distillation, if you will. Mm-hmm. So my first principle is that public is always safer than private.
Okay.
So if you stay in a public place, the chances are that you're going to be safe. Now, of course, you want to choose that place carefully. You know, you don't just go anywhere, but generally speaking, stay in a public place and you're safer. Don't get into a taxi with someone you don't know. A taxi is not a public place. You don't have the control over the situation. So it's just a really important lesson for me.
And when you say don't get in a taxi with someone you don't know, other than the taxi driver, obviously.
Make sure it's licensed and things of this nature. Sure. It's mm-hmm. not a pirate cab. Another principle that I have is that proactive is better than reactive.
Okay.
So if you're in a situation and either you want to meet someone, say you're at a pub or a bar, and you just want to talk to someone about the band, well, you choose who to talk to.
Okay.
Right? Don't have them choose you. Or if you want directions from someone, if you are in the middle of Manhattan and all of a sudden get confused between north and south and you're not certain where you're going, you look around and you choose who you're going to talk to, because the chances of you choosing the wrong person is very small compared to possibly the chances of the wrong person choosing you.
Okay, interesting.
So proactive rather than reactive. Engage people in your safety. Again, if you are not certain about something, people go out of their way to help solo travelers. There's something about the fact that you're alone. People look at me and they're amazed. They're concerned. They want to take care of me. So always engage people in your safety. I was in Memphis. I was doing a trip down the Blues Highway. And I was in Memphis and I was on my way to the, is it called the Civil Rights Museum? I'm not sure exactly the proper name of it. But there was no one around and I was walking and it was getting me a little bit nervous because there's no one around. I like public. So I was walking by an architectural firm, like an architect's office. I thought, well, they know the city. So I walked in and I just said, am I in decent area? Is this okay, what I'm doing? And so that's like kind of going out of my way, engaging people in my safety. But then the bonus was that this guy was on Twitter and he really knew the city really well. And he's telling me where to eat. It was fantastic. So anyways, engage people in your safety. Another principle I have is don't be rushed. Don't let people rush you.
Okay.
Because if people are rushing you into a decision, you can get confused. They can have other motives.
It sounds like there's a story behind where you came up with that principle.
The don't be rushed?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long story, but I'll give you a short one, though, as well.
Okay.
Yeah, the don't be rushed is you want to stand back and know what you're getting into. So I got off a train. Actually, this was in Memphis as well. And the porter didn't wake me up. It was an overnight train there. And the porter didn't wake me up. And I happened to wake up and was like, whoa. And I got all my bags together and I flew off the train. And then a taxi driver came up to me right away and wanted to take my bags and go into the car. Well, I wasn't ready for that. It was early in the morning. I wasn't certain what was going on. I wasn't certain that he was a legit cab driver. So I went into the station. I took my time, settled down, looked around. Okay, got the lay of the land, checked out his car from a distance, and decided, yeah, he was the right guy. He's fine. So then I went. So not to be rushed into making a decision, I think, is a really important thing.
And that can be hard in those sort of entry places. I'm just thinking of places I've gotten off the airport and you go outside and there's all sorts of people who want to help you or or not. I mean, you're trying to decide at that point who is trying to help me and who is trying to use me. But
absolutely. I think that what you point out is really important, because when you're in a place, you've arrived and you're settled, and you've landed, so to speak, things kind of go smoothly. You got your footing. Mm-hmm. But it's those transitions when things can go wrong. More often than not.
Well, and I think that's a good rule. If we're independent travelers, even if you're not traveling solo, I know I think I took my wife out of her comfort zone when we arrived in Cairo and we went outside and a gentleman said, you know, I can get you a cab. And I said, yes. And he took our bags and went off into the night. And we're following him in Cairo. And my wife just wasn't sure that we were going to see our bags again, that anyone was ever going to see us again. I think she wasn't quite as ready for that as I was. Mm-hmm. But this wasn't my first time arriving in a city at night, actually in the middle of the night in this case, and in a confusing, complex, chaotic city. And so it wasn't as uncomfortable for me as it was for her, but I didn't take into account that she probably would have been better off if I had paused, if we had taken that sort of strategic pause to get the lay of the land.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful. My final principle of safety is that you can be rude if you want to.
It's okay.
We don't, we're raised to be polite.
Well, and you're Canadian too, so that even more so there.
So, but I think that there are times when it's appropriate to be rude and go for it if you have to.
So can you give me an example?
I think that women often aren't accustomed to speaking loudly, to yelling, right, in public and things like that. I suggest that they find their voice before they leave on a trip. If they tend to be timid or pulled back in situations like that, go into a basement and yell, find your voice so that if you have to, you can do so.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've not been in a situation where I've had to do that. I've been rude before, but it's usually just hassles. And there's other things that you can do. And, you know, it took me a while in India to figure out how to get rid of these men that were coming at me all the time.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Until I went, my brother does not allow me to speak to strange men. Boom, they're gone. It was amazing. That was the magical sentence.
We found the magical sentence when we were in Shanghai was to say no, but to do it in Chinese. My son was really getting a little frustrated because everyone was coming up and, you know, trying to sell us a watch. Apparently, everybody who goes there has no watches because everyone is trying to sell you a Rolex, which I'm sure is authentic. But and, you know, we would say no, we would say no, thank you. We would say, and they would just really not go away. And I taught him how to say booyah. You know, basically, I don't want. And it's a fairly rude term. It's fairly abrupt in some ways. And the first person he said it to said, "Ooh, booyah," and kind of backed away. And he just thought that was just so magical. But sometimes there is a phrase that will work when nothing else does.
That's fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I also found when I was in Tanzania, I was off on my own just briefly. I was with a group, but I was traveling in a market by myself. And I found that everybody wanted to show me their wares. And my problem the first time through the market was I was at an American pace. And if I just slowed down a little and looked at people's wares and took a moment to look at them and comment on them and appreciate them and then said no thank you and walked on, I really had much less hassles than when I tried to go through at just a very quick, brisk pace. It was just I wasn't in sync with the country.
Mm. That's interesting, isn't it?
So as a solo traveler, what are your probably three most memorable trips?
The first one I would say is part of my trip to the UK a couple of years ago. I went to the Lake District.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
And I called it my digital detox because I went totally offline for 4 days, almost five. And I hiked. They call it walking. It sounds very easy. It's hiking. It's hiking through mountains. So it's much more strenuous than I was expecting, at least. But I'd never really hiked before. And one of the things that I discovered on this trip is that certainly the Lake District, because I was there in November, so we're talking off season, really.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there were still people around. So it was a very safe place to be hiking by myself, right? And the thing about that trip is that I discovered that I love hiking. I had always been a city traveler. And now I do a lot of more wilderness stuff. So that, for me, is a very, very magical thing. I stayed in Ambleside, and so I was in one location for the 5 days, 4 nights. And what I discovered is that if you go to the same place on a regular basis, as long as it's a real local place where the locals go, after the first, second, third night, they all get to know you, and you become a bit of a celeb. It's just really fun. So on the fourth night of my stay in Ambleside, I went back to the pub, this very small, very, very old pub, and it happened to be Guy Fawkes night.
Oh.
I knew there was going to be fireworks, right? So as soon as the fireworks started, I headed out, and I didn't realize that fireworks in the UK is like 2 minutes and then off to the pub. So by the time I got to the pub, they were all finished their first beer. But I walked in the door, and it was like, you know, Norm walking into Cheers. The place erupted. It erupted for me. And the musicians were playing Canadian tunes.
Oh, that's funny.
I couldn't buy a beer. And like, that's the generosity that solo travelers receive. It was wonderful.
One of the things that I found when I've done some solo trips is that it's easier to meet people because you're not already talking to someone.
Mm, absolutely.
But on the other hand, you have times of loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still something that you have found? And how do you cope with that?
You know, I don't have many times of loneliness. I have had times where, you know, I had to try to shake someone.
You've had times when you wanted loneliness. Okay. Of course, I'm doing this as a 6'3" large man, and you're not.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of a different scene. But no, I haven't really faced the loneliness before, or not much. Certainly, I will feel it sometimes. Sometimes it happens when I really want to share something. I came out of a play in New York one time, and I just wanted to talk about it. right?
Sure.
It was a really fabulous play, and I wanted to take it apart, and I wanted to talk with someone about the staging and the direction and you know, the structure of the play. I want to talk about everything. And I didn't have anyone to talk with about it. So that's what I miss. It's not so much loneliness as sometimes is the person to share things with.
But it sounds like one of the ways that you're dealing with that is you're not staying in the hotel room. You're going out to the pub. You're going to a place where you can interact with people on your terms.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And also, I don't stay in hotels very often. Mm. I do prefer bed and breakfasts as well as hostels, because there are some great hostels now. And hostels are even more social than bed and breakfasts, just because I think the mentality of the people that go there, they're just really open, friendly. They're, it's kind of a worldview, a sensibility about travel. And you sit in the common room or the lounge for a little bit and, you know, you're engaged.
And I'm hoping people have figured out that hostels, that you don't outgrow them when you turn 24 or something like that. I think that word has gone out, but.
Yeah, because some of them are really great. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they have private rooms.
Right.
Right. And sometimes private rooms with private baths.
That I have not run into. Okay.
Yeah.
But
it's not that common, but on occasion, yeah. So because so many hostels are run on a private basis. Hmm. It was YHA when I started traveling in my teens. But they've certainly changed a lot. And I do highly recommend them. I do like the luxury now and then, I have to say. You know, I do enjoy a fine hotel. But the hotel room offers me only so much. Mm-hmm. It's the engagement with people that I really enjoy.
Well, and I also found that when I am doing a solo trip, that I will also learn things in the hostel. I'll run into the person who is coming the other direction, or who has already been there, or who has tried the crickets in Oaxaca.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're really right. To people, there are a great resource of information. And because there is some sort of commonality in terms of how you approach travel, the resources are somewhat reliable. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a really good point.
Okay. So yeah. Your first best trip was the Lake Country. And your second one?
It was Patagonia in Chile.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Took the Navimag ferry.
Okay.
It crashed.
Excuse me?
It truly did. I've been on two boats that have crashed. I can't believe it.
So you're saying I invited you on the show so we could tell people why it's safe to go solo travel and you're on a ship that crashed. Okay?
No, I mean, clearly I survived. But it was 3 o'clock in the morning of the last night. We were supposed to arrive in harbor that morning, and they hit an island.
Well, those tricky islands are always moving around and such.
Yeah, I know. Someone was not paying attention. Anyways, it was very exciting, and we got in late. But the Navimag ferry itself is fabulous. And, I mean, I always feel that if something bad happens after that, that's the best time to be using that resource, because they're being really careful, having had that experience. But, no, the Navimag ferry, there must have been 30 solo travelers on it. So it's a true car ferry, transport ferry, right? Uh-huh. And then they have cabins as well for, I don't know, I would say about 150 people maybe it accommodates. You can get private rooms, you can get fours and things, and then just bunks. And I was in a room of four. As I say, there were about 30 solo travelers on board. We all socialized. It was just wonderful. And I met a young woman from France there. She and I hit it off. She's about 30. So we ended up hiking Patagonia together, hiking Torres del Paine. And I had booked some refugios and she had not. So when we got in port, we canceled all my refugios and rented a tent. And then the two of us went in and tented and hiked together. So it was a pretty special trip.
And for those people who didn't just listen to this week's episode, we talked about refugios being the shelters that you stay in for trekkers.
Right. Okay. So it was a lovely, lovely trip. It was just wonderful.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Solo travel, single supplement.
Mm.
Trips for saving money when you're traveling solo.
To beat the single supplement?
Well, just in general, but that's one of the things I think of is, and for the people who aren't aware of the single supplement, it's the extra that you pay because you won't be filling two parts of a room, and so many tours, especially in cruises, are priced per person based on double occupancy. That's not the price for a single traveler.
Yeah. So many tour companies will partner you up with someone of the same gender. Mm-hmm. That's an option. And then if they don't have someone to partner you up with, they will not charge you a single supplement to have a private room. So that's a fairly common thing, though you have to ask the tour operator whether that's a possibility with them.
Okay.
The other thing is that if you are booking either early, like when the trip is first announced, or late, you can ask. Ask to have the single supplement waived or reduced significantly, because that may help them kick off the trip in terms of numbers, or it may help them fill last-minute slots.
Okay, so wait until they're in a position where they're willing to negotiate a little.
Yeah, and okay. It can be early and it can be late. I've been told both. So that's one way. The other thing that I would suggest is put out a Google alert for single supplement waived.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then any tours that come online and press releases and things like that,
yep.
Where they've just announced that they waived the single supplement on a trip, that'll come into your inbox.
Interesting. Okay.
That's another way of doing it. And then sometimes, you know what? The deals are so good out there, you just pay the supplement.
Okay.
I mean, because truly, sometimes the deals that come through are just fabulous. And it still kind of frustrates a solo traveler to think that they have to pay more. But, you know, you have to look at the bottom line. And if it's really good, well, then go for it.
Okay. And the third trip that you did, that was one of your top three trips?
Well, it has to be India.
Okay.
Yeah, it has to be India. Before I was leaving for India, I went to an Indian restaurant just outside of Toronto in a place called Ancaster, talking to the owner, telling her that I was going in a few weeks. And she said, "You must change your dates and come with me. My brother is getting married."
Now, this is someone you've known your whole life, I assume?
No, never met her before.
And you did?
Of course I did. Of course I did. So, I mean, this is the type of thing that happens to solo travelers, right? If you're really open to the world, which you can be more so as a solo traveler, these things just keep on coming in. It's incredible. So, I mean, that's got nothing to do with me being a travel blogger,
uh-huh.
Right? Certainly, I have certain benefits that come my way because I'm a travel blogger.
Sure.
But the ones that I've described to you have nothing to do with me being a travel blogger.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyways, yeah. So she said, "You've got to come into my brother's wedding." So we went. They lived in this very small village about 3 hours north of Delhi called Amagar. I think that probably it's been a decade since they last saw a white woman there, and certainly with gray hair, which I have. You can't see me, but I have. So people were staring at me all the time. We arrived the night before the wedding, and so there was a party going on. All the young girls, they were just fawning over me, pulling me in, teaching me to dance. You know, the turn the light bulb dance kind of thing that they do in Bollywood? So, you know, they were teaching me how to dance. And then I had the henna done. And then all the sisters needed to choose my outfit for the wedding. You know, I was just adopted. It was extraordinary. Oh, and then I slept with all of the sisters and a few children on mats on the ground, and just all of us, because it was January and it was cold. So all of us were sleeping really snugged up together with these very thick blankets over top of us to keep the body heat, to keep us each other warm. So talking about jumping from Toronto into this scene, it was amazing. So I spent 5 days there and was just really engaged with the family and family life and the whole wedding scene and the like. And then from there, I went to the ashram. I had planned to go to the ashram first, but from there, I went to the ashram, spent a week there. And there I met a woman from England. She was traveling for her 40th birthday. She was doing a 6-month solo trip for her 40th. And she had traveled very little before, and she'd never traveled solo, and she went to India first. And I went, "Oh my goodness, dear, you really jumped into the deep end." So she actually changed her plans a little bit, and we traveled for a while after we left the ashram. I went to Rajasthan and traveled through Rajasthan, and it was just fantastic. It was just a fantastic trip.
Excellent. As we start to wrap this up.
Okay.
One thing you want people to know who are thinking that maybe, possibly, they might be willing to do this?
I want them to know that they can. Mm-hmm. Last year, I spoke at the Smithsonian about solo travel. And I did some research before going through various sources, through Twitter, through Facebook, you know, through my readers, etc., to try to find out, you know, what do people want from me when I speak? And what I got back is that they want to know that this is possible. And so my presentation is built all around examples and stories that show that it's possible. I'm actually a shy person.
I could believe that. I've met you.
Yeah. And yet I manage to go out into the world and I get to meet people all the time. And I meet wonderful people and I have amazing experiences. And anyone who does this will as well. And if you go onto the Solo Travel Society and engage in what's going on there, you'll see how many people have such a huge enthusiasm for the fact that they are traveling solo, because of what it delivers to them. And it's not only about the meeting of the people, it's also about the solitude. It's also about getting to discover yourself when no one's looking. When you're at home, you are defined by the people around you. Mm-hmm. You know, they have expectations of you, and you behave in a manner that meets those expectations. If you bring those people with you, you're going to continue to do so. When you travel solo, you get to stand back and go, don't want to do that, do want to do that. And you do get to kind of uncover more about who you are as an individual. So there's just it's a rich experience in so many ways that I really do encourage people to go. And you don't have to go to India for your first time. Right?
Or even Cuba.
Or even Cuba. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. If you do, you know, land in the day. But you can take a trip to a town that's an hour away or 2 hours away and experience that and just get the feeling of exploring an area alone within your own culture.
Excellent.
Right. And then just keep on stretching yourself out. And truly, some of the stretching is really fun. It sounds silly, but I was in London last fall. And every time I go to London, I've got to learn how to use the tube again, right? It's complicated. And the second day I was on the tube, I was just using it like I've been doing it all my life. And it was just this extraordinary feeling of power and being capable. And like, that's the type of thing that you don't get every day. And you do get that type of thing all the time from traveling solo.
I think you've hit on something there, because I think as an independent traveler, not even necessarily as a solo traveler, I think of the number of people who are afraid to go, who I talk to. And then I think of landing, for us, it wasn't London, it was Prague, where we really can't even read the language and trying to figure out the transit system there. And I think part of it is getting to the point of it's a puzzle, and you do feel so accomplished when you solve it.
Absolutely.
That it does, I think, enable you to do other things. It enables you in many ways, I think.
You know, you're right. You're right, because you come home. And you've got that just elevated sense of confidence because you've navigated and negotiated something that's so foreign. So if you can do that there, well, then you can do something that at home that may be a little bit more challenging than you would have expected to do before. You know, our lives, they build on experiences, and any experience that you can have that is a positive and building one, I think that, you know, it serves you really well.
There was a recent TED Talk, the talks about a psychologist who deals with people with phobias. And this was very real phobias, like I'm afraid of snakes, and how he could, within the course of a few hours, actually acclimate them to the point where they were sitting with a snake on their lap. And,
wow.
You know, it was a series of small steps and very guided and, you know, from, okay, there's a snake in the other room and we're going to go in there, or now you can see it through the window, and basically not all at once. And the interesting thing I thought with that one was, not only do they get over their phobias, but because they have conquered this phobia, they are empowered in so many different ways, is the unexpected thing for me.
Yeah, it's great, eh? To be a continually growing and learning individual is a very exciting way to be. And that's something that can happen when you're traveling at all, but especially when you're traveling solo.
Last question. Before we started talking, you were saying that you also, even when you're traveling independently and solo, you will supplement it sometimes with day trips or tours or things like that. Any suggestions there in terms of, do you wait till you're on the ground to look for something? Do you plan ahead of time? Both?
Well, it depends upon where you're going, I think. If you're going to a city that's pretty easy to navigate, the language is pretty straightforward. I mean, even if it's not your own language, but it's a romantic language, I think it's relatively easy to land and sort yourself out.
And you mean a language in the romantic language group, not just a language where you can pick up women?
I hadn't even gone there in my mind, okay. No. Yes, in the romantic group. But I was like you in Prague, right? I was in St. Petersburg. I went to Russia in May, and I was in St. Petersburg and in Moscow. And I did arrange for tours before I got there. Actually, they were urban adventure tours. And I arranged for them before I got there because I knew that these cities were going to be more challenging. Mm-hmm. They don't use the same script as us.
Right.
And I wanted to have that foundation, that kind of lay of the land before I got into it. And I do think that that's really worthwhile. In other cases, you know, you can enter the city and if you're staying at a hostel, some of them have a recommendation. There's lots of options. And there are also lots of free tours that are available, lots and lots of free tours,
right,
especially
sure.
through Europe mm-hmm. that you can take and it can be really great.
And we should mention that Urban Adventures, no, Janice knows this, but the listeners may not, is a brand by Intrepid Travel, which actually is sponsoring this episode.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They're a great company for sure.
Excellent. If you had to summarize solo travel in three words, what three words would you use?
Fun.
Okay.
Can I have a hyphenated word?
Everyone does.
Everyone does. Confidence building.
Okay.
Enriching.
Excellent. Janice, where can people read more about your travels and where can they join the Solo Traveler Society?
Okay. My blog is called Solo Traveler. The URL is solotravelerblog.com. On Facebook, there's the Solo Travel Society. And the URL for that is simply facebook.com/solotravelsociety, all one word. I'm on Twitter at Solo Traveler. And I also have a book out called The Solo Traveler's Handbook, which is available through Amazon.
And I believe we have a review for that on the Amateur Traveler.
That's correct, yes.
Janice, thanks so much for coming on and giving us the courage to get out there on our own.
Thank you so much. It's been really fun.
I'm going to skip the news of the community this week because this show is coming out late because life is complicated sometimes. If you have any feedback for the show, though, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X or join in the discussion on Facebook, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. As always, thanks so much for listening.